by for Wyoming Hooking and Hunting Outdoors with your host, Drew Kirby.
Hey, this is Luke Holmes.
I am Morgan Wallen.
I'm Riley Green.
I'm Travis Denning.
Hey, I'm Aaron Lewis.
Hey, it's Luke Bryan.
I'm Tim McGraw.
What's up? This is Ian Munsick.
Wyoming Hooking and Hunting Outdoors.
All right, Janet, we're looking a little different this time. You're in studio. Normally we do this over like a Zoom situation, but you've got a celebrity in town, so you might as well, you know, thought you'd come over and come to the studio.
Right. And holy cow, have you guys changed the studio since I've been here? So congratulations on getting that redone.
Yeah.
If that tells you how old and how long we've been doing this show, I guess.
It has to be probably, gosh, almost 3.5 years probably since you've been here.
Oh, yeah, at least.
So, I mean, bet. And Dan, I think that was the last time you were here, too.
Yeah. The last time we were here, it was because Dr. Dan was in town. And so here we are again.
Yeah, Dan Thompson, obviously, large carnivore. Is it specialist supervisor? How do they like to say it? He likes big things.
Yeah,
right?
There you go. Technically, we call him the supervisor because he does oversee the entire large carnivore program, which in the Game and Fish Department does encompass, you know, a lot of those things that we kind of classify as trophy game and are the large carnivores. So the mountain lions, the gray wolf, the black bears, and then the grizzly bears as well.
Dan, we've had you on a lot, and a lot of times our main conversation is bears. This time of year also, the bears starting to come alive and things are starting to change up a little bit. But this time, I really want to focus in on just the large carnivore umbrella, because I think there probably isn't, and I know that there isn't much discussion on just that topic of large carnivores and really what makes a large carnivore different than, you know, say other animals. Like, what is it about them? Is it the medulla oblongata, you know?
Way to pull that one out. For those of you that don't know, that's a part of your brain, right?
Yeah, right.
Well, I guess the main thing is that as carnivores, they eat meat, obviously. Now, and I know it's confusing, bears are omnivores, but they are in the carnivora family. And so these animals are obviously a lot different than deer or elk. And some of these animals can be a human safety threat. And so because of what they do and their life history, they're a different animal altogether. And I guess our section was first brought forth because of grizzly bears. There was enough workload beyond the standard biologist game warden position that was kind of the genesis of our section. And then through time, as we've wanted to learn more about these other carnivores, mountain lions, black bears, and wolves. Again, when the section started, wolves weren't even in the mix, and mountain lions in certain areas weren't in the mix either, quite honestly. And so in order to, you know, the public has a lot of questions about these animals. They're very interested in these animals. They're very opinionated about these animals. And so that's why I guess we exist to learn as much about these animals and portray that information to the public.
And, you know, Dan brings up a very interesting point, but these animals are really so divisive. People really either love them or they hate them. And so, you know, Dan and his crew are really good at dealing with the conflict from both sides, right? Like they always, we talk a lot about in Game and Fish when we manage our public resource, which is the wildlife, we have to consider all sides of it, not just the science and not just, you know, one side. It's everybody's opinion that goes into it. And large carnivores really are a challenge because people either love them or they don't.
It's interesting because I would say if there was controversy, the large carnivores are where you get in the controversy most of the time, right? I mean, everybody knows the deer herds are struggling, so you want to, you know, maybe not hunt them as much or whatever. But you either have, like Janet said, the people that love Bear 399 and will lay out in the street for Bear 399, or you have the ranchers that are dealing with wolves killing their sheep. Right. I mean, and it really happens. So you're getting a little bit of both, and I'm sure it's got to be tough, especially if you're in a meeting or have someone come to the office and really are passionate either way.
Yeah, it's kind of a yin and yang, right? There's idolatry to hatred and everything in between, but it's better than apathy. You know, that we have a very interested public in these animals, and I guess we use that to our advantage to be able to talk to people and And just being there to let people vent and hear their frustrations, but also back it up with what we know and try to help wherever we can and answer those questions. There's a lot of myths out there as well. But I think going into it is we know there's a lot of polarity with these animals, but we also know there's a lot of interest. And so, yeah, it can be intriguing at times. And I've joked that as long as everybody's angry at me, I'm doing my job. But it's not really true. I think we're fortunate to be able to deal with these animals and a public that is very interested in them, whether they love or hate them. And I understand that these animals, they have the capacity to do things to people, to injure or kill people, and we don't want to put any of that lightly. But I think that's why we talk about that foundation of our work is that outreach and education and letting people know what they can do to reduce those types of situations.
So most of the time when people hear about a wolf or a grizzly bear, you hear about it in the northwest part of the state, but there are wolves in different parts of this state, and some wolves are in areas now where maybe they weren't years and years ago because of how they migrate and they move around. And what do people that live in an area that all of a sudden you start hearing wolf reports and everything need to really be aware of to, you know, keep themselves, their families, their livestock all safe?
Well, yeah, that's a good question.
That is a good question.
When it comes to wolves, you know, a lot of the state, we don't really manage for wolves, and there's not good habitat for wolves in, outside of northwest Wyoming. But they do, as you said, they do wander, and we've seen them in this area, eastern part of the state. And I mean, we've picked them up from the Great Lakes population dispersing west, actually, into the Black Hills, I know, in the past. Most of those animals are transient, but yeah, definitely if you have one sticking around, the issues we see with wolves, as far as for a negative standpoint, is they don't like dogs. They're very territorial. And, yeah, when it comes to domestic livestock, sheep and calves can be an issue if you have those, if you can pen things up at night. But most of the wolves that you're seeing outside of northwest Wyoming don't generally get established because we're not managing for them in those areas.
So I guess a couple of months ago or whatever, we had wolves come up from Colorado that were just placed there. So they were looking for food and they found some here. And obviously, you know, they're predators at that point. So you could take care of them yourself or contact Game and Fish. And will you guys swoop in and basically take them and remove them from that area? Is that how you would deal with that?
It's a little more, it's a little more involved, right? Than
every
that.
Every time it's different.
And again, in that part of the state where they're predators, we don't really have management authority. So that would be wildlife services or predator management boards dealing with those animals, or the public themselves. You know, they have the ability to do whatever they see fit with those animals if they're on their property. But yeah, we're there managed as a game species. We're very involved with that and trying to reduce. One thing that we've seen through time as we've managed for an objective population is we've reduced overall depredation, reduced the amount of animals that we have to kill for depredating, and that's what we would like to see.
So, Dan, can you give just a little bit of a description on what you're talking about with depredation and why you would have to remove a wolf from a population? Because I don't know that there is a great understanding out there among the general public about, you know, what damage means in
sure. in the term
game and
depredation.
Fish. So, yeah, in I mean, the game and fish lingo and why we're responsible for that.
Sure. Depredation is the term we use for animals killing livestock. So if a grizzly bear kills a calf or if a mountain lion kills a lamb, that's the term we use as depredation versus predation, which is what we use for natural prey. And so we definitely see waning tolerance anytime depredation occurs with any of these species. And so we want to try to remove that as quickly as possible. A lot of times that will result in a lethal removal of the animal responsible, but we are targeting that specific individual that is involved with killing that livestock. Luckily, it's fairly rare. And that's why if we target those individuals, we can reduce that for the future.
And as an overall, that could be any of the large carnivores.
Correct.
Right? It's not just wolves, not just grizzlies. It's everything.
Correct, correct. Mountain lions are our least issue when it comes to killing livestock, but there's that potential there, and that's why we have trained people across the state in order to deal with those situations as swiftly as possible.
And when Dan talks about we have people across the state to deal with these situations as swiftly as possible, they're not sharpshooters, right? They're not out there to remove them from the population. There are so many fantastic deterrents that they have that they put into place, like electric fencing. Right. We have, you know, the things you often see at car lots, the big blow-up, yeah. come and stop here, yeah. things that are kind of scary looking that you dream about at night. They can put those in the middle of, you know, livestock herds and things to really deter those animals from coming. And so it's not always we see a large carnivore, we're going to remove it from the population. That is not the right. case. And I really want to reassure people that, you know, first and foremost, we always get into these positions because we love those animals, right? It's not about hunting seasons and all of those sorts of things. It's about managing the wildlife. And if we are managing the wildlife for the public and that animal needs to be removed for, you know, the public safety or the animal safety, we will absolutely do that. But for the most part, we will try 1,000 ways of relocating those animals, you know, doing these different deterrents, preventative stuff before we do remove them. So I just want people to recognize that as well.
Right. You know, there's an interest in how these animals die, why they die, things like that. That's where the media focus generally is. But at the end of the day, we're seeking to learn how they live and what they do on a daily basis mm-hmm. across the state. And that's why we do a lot of monitoring of these species to be able to answer those questions for the public. So, yeah, that finite end result of having to kill an animal is one very small component of a larger process of learning about these animals.
Oh, fantastic. It's always a great time with Dr. Dan Thompson of Wyoming Game and Fish, large carnivore supervisor, and Janet Millick. And we're going to continue next week. There's a lot more to cover with large carnivores. So we're going to make this a couple of week session over the next couple of weeks here. So stick around. We continue the show with Brian Woodward in just minutes.
It's Wyoming Hooking and Hunting Outdoors.
It's Drew along with Brian Woodward from Rocky Mountain Discount Sports. And Brian, I'm feeling pretty spry after an all-you-can-eat walleye dinner.
Yeah, I think it should have had a pretty good time. And I know it was a lot of work and effort going into it, but it's over and on to fishing.
Yeah, fishing is going to be great, especially, you know, we've had a couple of really warm days and a little cool down this weekend and then right back into the warmth next week.
Yeah, I think I don't want to say, you know, per se summer's here, but we are right on the edge of it. And as long as we're prepared for some afternoon thunderstorms and yep. Watch the big old W forecast, I think, you know, guys are going to get out and have a good safe time.
I think so as well. And, you know, in the past, I kind of get worried because of the whole, well, this is a false spring or, you know, kind of a fake summer or whatever. But looking at the forecast, I mean, it's looking pretty strong.
Yeah, and so far the fishing reports have been really good from the people I've talked to. So, I mean, looking forward to another hopefully enjoyable summer of catching some good walleyes.
I know over the weekend, yeah, I had the bucket sale, so that was awesome for people to restock their boats and get things kind of ready and get the ball rolling for the spring. And we talked about you carrying a newer line of rain gear over the last couple of years, and I think it's something people need to probably start looking at.
Yeah, you know, that Striker apparel for the, you know, a pair of bibs or just waterproof pants and a jacket. A lot of options there. There's some insulated stuff, you know, so if you want to use something that maybe would cross over to your ice fishing or those, you know, really chilly mornings, it's some great products. So, yeah, come in and check it out. We've got a lot of good sun shirts, you know, Columbia, some Under Armour. We have Striker. There's a lot of good options for keeping you covered and keeping the sun off you.
You know, my wife and I were talking because we're getting really close in what just over a month from the first Stampede tournament, and I was like, well, you know, I probably need to get a new setup because you never know what it's going to be weather wise. And she's like, you're on a boat. Why would you want to wear bibs?
Because they're actually fairly comfortable and breaks the wind. And if it does rain, you got that covered too.
Yeah, no, we're not out there as playboat people. I mean, we're not getting on skis and tubes.
No, we're sitting, and most of the time just watching fishermen.
Yeah, but obviously, if you are looking for anything for the outdoors,
cars. Come on in here and check them out at Rocky Mountain Discount Sports. And we've talked a lot lately about, you know, being in that in-between area with maybe going and shooting some predators or, mm-hmm. or some, maybe some birds or some clays now. But now it's serious fishing time.
It is serious fishing time, but, you know, we've got a lot of good rod and reel combos. There's some really some new lines that we brought in. We brought some stuff in from 13 Fishing this year. Of course, we have all the St. Croix and G. Loomis and all the other stuff. But, you know, if you're just the guy that's just looking for that ugly stick, or actually we got in a bunch of really good catfishing rod and reel combos, so that's pretty popular, especially down at Glendale and some of those areas. So come in, check out what we've got. I mean, you won't be disappointed. You know, any rod and reel combo that you purchase, we'll spool the line for free. You know, so that's a little plus. You don't have to go home and argue with the wife about not holding the pencil and the spool, right?
You know, but that's one of the adventures, I guess, of fishing. And you know, being a walleye guy that you are, I've talked to a couple of guys and. There was a guy that wanted to buy his buddy a startup pack. Mm-hmm. And I was like, well, you know what? I'll ask Brian some of the things you need to put in that, because, you know, that's a pretty cool, you know, gift if you got a friend or something. Sure. That's trying to get in on that.
Yeah, you know, I always kind of ask people how they like to fish first, right? I mean, if you're the guy that's cooler, lawn chair, and just sitting on the shoreline, right. You know, that's going to be a whole different setup and presentation. Rod and reel-wise, probably going to be real similar. Typically, you know, we like to run like an average of 6'6", with a medium or medium-fast action. However... what you're going to put behind that is going to be, you know, determining, you know, your presentation and presentation style. So, you know, a lot of guys bank fishing will just run a slip sinker with a hook and a minnow. Sometimes they'll run a floating jig head just to keep it up off the bottom, maybe out of the weeds a little bit, out of the mud. So that's probably one of the most popular ones for just letting it sit and just, you know, kicking back and yeah. chilling. Maybe put a little bell on there so, you know, wake you up when you got that bite. But you know, if you're going to be, you know, jig fishing, you know, probably going to still recommend the same rod and reel combo, but then we might run a jig with a minnow where you're just casting it back and forth, you know, up and down the shoreline. Or if you're, want to be active and not go with the live bait option, then, you know, we'll throw like a twister tail on a quarter ounce jig head, maybe an 1/8 ounce jig head, and same thing up and down the shorelines and just working that differently. Of course, there's a lot of guys that are getting into the old jerkbait world, you know, watching a lot, taking after a lot of bass fishermen. Mm-hmm. And surprisingly, the walleyes like eating jerkbaits just as much as a bass does.
It's funny how that works.
Funny how that works, yeah.
They swim in the same places and like the same stuff.
And eat the same steak.
Crazy. It's crazy how it works. And I'll tell you that if you're looking for that startup package, it's always a good idea to come in. I mean, obviously, there are enough people in the store that can help you out, give you an idea. And even price point is pretty important when you're coming in, too, because, you know, do you want to start off really slow just to see if you like it, or you want to start out at the top?
Yeah, I ask them what they want to do or how they want to fish first, and then I ask them kind of what their budget is, you know, and whether it's a $69 rod and reel combo or we go to a, you know, $200 rod or, you know, what's my budget, you know, and then we'll get you set up.
Well, and obviously that price point can jump very quickly, but it's well worth it because you pay a little more money, you're going to have a better quality of item, and that really comes down to... you know, lasting a lot longer because you get a cheap rod or cheap reel and you're going to get the cheap results out of that, I believe.
You know, I think in a lot of cases, you know, you just have to really match up the rod and reel to the type of fish that you're going to be fishing for. You know, if you're going to be catfishing, you're going to want something a little bit bigger, a little bit stouter. Yeah. You know, you might be running 20-pound, 30-pound, you know, mono. Or, you know, when we start fishing for walleyes, especially on a jig presentation, I scale down all the way to 6-pound. And that increases the sensitivity of the bite. And so you want to match a rod that can also, you know, work into that whole setup. You know, I think the common problems or mistakes I see with a lot of people, and it's amazing. I talk to people that go out to Pathfinder and say, boy, I just can't catch a walleye out there. And, you know, boy, you talk to just about anybody and they're like, I can't keep these little 13 inches off my line.
Yeah.
But I think it's a lot of times it's because they're, you know, just running too heavy of a setup. You know, they've got, you know, a pretty, either an old rod or a heavy rod. And, you know, and I know that because they say, hey, can you spool this reel up? And I want 12-pound test. I'm like, boy, what the heck are you fishing for that you need 12-pound test for?
Right.
And I get it. People don't want to lose lures, but, you know, you're fighting these fish with your with the drag of your reel more than anything else. So you can definitely scale down. And I think most guys, I think they do realize that once they do get into that, you know, lighter line, that they do feel more bites and they are a little more successful.
I remember last year during one of the Glendale tournaments, we were watching a young kid that we thought was pulling out a whopper of a walleye, but was fighting hard, and the pole was bending over, and it was a catfish.
Right.
And so he wasn't really set up for catfishing then.
Yeah, but, you know, you've been on the boat with me, and we've caught catfish while we're, you know, jig fishing, too. And, yeah, you know, and we're able to fight those fish and land fish with six-pound monos. So.
And that huge carp, yeah. I think we were up a Pathfinder and fought that sucker forever, and it was even taking the boat away from us. But no matter what you're looking for, come on in here, check it out. They got it here at Rocky Mountain Discount Sports.
It's Wyoming Hooking and Hunting Outdoors.
It's Drew along with Brian Woodward back at Rocky Mountain Discount Sports, where Brian, boy, time is moving pretty quickly now. The Tough Man is just 2 weeks away.
That's right. Yeah, we got quite a few entries in already, and if the weather holds out like it has been, it's not going to be so much a Tough Man.
Right.
On top of that, I've heard that the fishing's been pretty dang good at Alcova. So if you're interested in fishing the Tough Man, you can get on our Facebook page or our website, and you can get an application there. Or if you want to swing by Rocky Mountain Discount Sports, I do have applications. You do have to be a member. So if you attended the Walleye Banquet last week and on a sponsor table, you probably got some sponsorship applications, membership applications. But otherwise, it's $20 for a family. And this tournament is kind of really more led to be a membership drive for us more than anything else. We do pay it back 100%, so money's all getting back to the anglers. But it's a great event. Looks like the weather is probably going to hold out for us, and the fishing's been good, so I expect to be measuring quite a few fish on that event.
Yeah, and look for the North Platte Walleye Unlimited is where you're going on Facebook and the website there. And also just come in here and check them out at Rocky Mountain Discount Sports. And on that same kind of pathway, we're looking at the Stampede starting up very soon. Their first round is at the end of May.
May 10th and 11th.
Oh, yeah. The beginning of May.
Mother's Day weekend.
Oh, that's right.
So get your wife, get your mom set up with a nice spa day, you know, give them a nice relaxing day with a book where they can, you know, get them some bonbons, and then you go fishing, get out of their hair. They're not going to be upset about it. You know, just do it. But, yeah, Mother's Day weekend, the 10th and 11th, and the last day to register for that event will be 5 p.m. on Wednesday the 7th.
All right. So, and if you haven't ever fished one of the Stampedes, it's awesome to do it because it's a big time tournament. You know, people come from all over the Mountain West and even from the Midwest to fish this tournament.
Yeah, you know, and it's a $420 fee to sign up for it, which, you know, is $100 a day per person. It's not that much. Save your money now. Don't go out for dinner a couple times between now and then. Yeah. You'll have the cash. But that event will pay out $10,000 for the first place, and it will pay down around 25 places.
That's wild. And obviously, when you come out to these things, it's an experience because there's a lot of people going to win stuff. You can get in on the side pots, and you can get in on all kinds of different things.
Yeah, and this is the first year in 17 years that we're not holding the event at the marina. So this year the event will be held at Bellwood Boats. So we'll have our rules meeting there. The same check-in process that we've always done, you know, out on the breaker docks. And if you are a little unsure, like, boy, I've never fished a tournament before, and you're not sure how the whole setup works or how to line up and all that kind of stuff, jump on the Walleye Stampede's website, and there's a video on there. We did a drone video that kind of shows the check-in process and how we pull up to boats and measure boats or measure fish. It's all catch and release. You still get your daily limit of 6 per person, 12 per boat, and then we're going to measure. We're going to take your top 5 towards the overall weight for the win. So it's a great way to learn, see kind of different areas of the lake, what guys are doing, especially you know if you get the guys that win, that kind of give us a little bit of a breakdown of what they were doing to win. Sometimes we can squeeze it out of them, sometimes we can't, but it's good camaraderie. Bellwood Boats is going to be our headline for this one. They're going to do a customer appreciation on Saturday. So that evening, we'll have the results at Bellwood, and then they're going to put on a feed for Stampede anglers and customers that have helped them to get to where they're at today.
So we had kind of an interesting winter where we really didn't have that crazy of a winter. We had a little snow on Casper Mountain, but water-wise, there was some ice off. What are we thinking about now with the warmth this early and water temperatures?
Well, the beauty with reservoir systems is that there really is no consistency, right? The water rate rises, the water falls. Water levels are going to be different each year. The spawn is going to happen at different times. The water current, you know, coming into Glendo affects that spawn. I've talked to guys that have caught walleyes that have already spawned out. I've talked to guys that on different parts of the lake that they haven't spawned out. And the water's quite a bit lower than it was last year. I think probably we're at 65%, which might be down 5% or 5 foot in right now compared to where it was last year. So, you know, it's not that, you know, well, I caught fish here last year, so I'm going to go right back to that same spot. Not saying they're not going to be there. But the water levels, the water clarity, the just water flow in general is definitely a big impact on what these fish do in these reservoir systems. So, you know, it's get out there and start dissecting, you know, the bite and, you know, what they're doing. And we just won't know until we get there.
You're saying it's not like shooting fish in a barrel now?
Well, no, it doesn't. And even when the water's low and it looks like a barrel, the fish are still not as easy to catch as you would think.
Yeah. Well, and I have seen a lot of guys that have been talking about doing the river, getting out on the river. And that's always, you know, good to do any time of the year because you can do that year round pretty much.
Yeah, we've seen a lot of fly fishermen coming through, a lot of out-of-state guys, you know, a lot of in-state guys. I was supposed to float the river on Wednesday. That didn't happen. So, you know, went and did a little walleye fishing. So,
that's rough.
You know, yeah. You know, I get my 2 days off, my Wednesdays and my Sundays. And so I got to make the best of them. There's obviously a lot of, I mean, all the reservoirs are open. The rivers are open. There's lots of places to go. You know, Wyoming's getting busier and busier with our recreation. You know, everybody needs to be patient with each other. Yeah. I don't know if you saw, I think I sent you the video of the charter captain in Florida.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, I'm sure everybody's seen that escapade, you know, where a charter captain was upset with some young 21 or 22 year old about not fishing in a spot, but I don't even know. His buddy didn't have lights on his machine or on his boat the night before. And I mean, this guy jumped on his boat and now he's getting charged with burglary and assault.
Yeah. Yeah. That guy has seen himself way too much on social media and he's a guide. So that probably isn't helping him out at all.
No, his business is his business page. And I think his website has all been shut down and he's actually looking at, you know, possibly doing some time. I mean, and it was an unfortunate situation. I mean, you know, these bodies of waters we fish, although they seem small, they're plenty big, and there's plenty of opportunities to go find fish. And if someone's in your favorite spot, go make a new favorite spot, you know. And it's amazing how many people I fish with that said, all right, I'm going to take you to my secret spot. And I'm like, oh, you mean this waypoint right here on my fish finder? Yeah. Been there, done that. You know?
It shouldn't humor me, but it kind of does. When you'll see someone fishing somewhere and someone, it's their favorite spot, and they'll creep up on them and, you know, fish 20 feet away from them instead of, you know, just kind of going down the way. So a little common courtesy and, you know.
Yeah, I mean, pay attention to what direction guys are working a shoreline, right? You know, if you want to come in behind them, you know, I think that's probably better than, you know, jumping in front of them. And, you know, if I can cast, if we can cast to each other and cross streams, then we're too close.
No cross streams on this boat. No crossing streams. All right, guys. Well, again, if you need any help with getting your fishing license, which you need to have that before you head out, your AIS sticker, any of your ORV stickers or anything like that, come on in and see him at Rocky Mountain Discount Sports.
It's Wyoming Hooking and Hunting Outdoors.
It's another great show, and we do appreciate you tuning in to Wyoming Hooking and Hunting Outdoors. One of the things we love about this state is the state of the outdoors and the opportunities that we have to hunt, fish, hike, camp, and just enjoy the outdoors. And I have Pete Madsen with me, and Pete, well, he has multiple ways that he is working in the outdoors these days. And Pete, I appreciate you being on the show and giving us some info.
Yeah, thanks, Drew. Happy to be here.
We just had you at a Thankful Thursday, a fundraising event where you do work with backcountry hunters and anglers, and basically raise money to support the cause. And to keep that free and keep it open for all of us, and I know that this is such a great organization that you've done a lot with over the last few years.
Yeah, Backcountry Hunters and Anglers it's a national organization, but our Wyoming chapter is small and mighty. It's a really a grassroots organization made up of folks like me. So. Maybe not the A students and not a lot of us, but people who are heavily invested in public lands and waters and very interested in protecting those places and improving those places and making sure we have access to those places as well as opportunities to hunt and fish and enjoy the outdoors as public landowners.
In Wyoming, the Access Yes program is a great program with Wyoming Game and Fish to kind of give people the insight and opportunities to reach out and get into areas where they normally maybe wouldn't go or didn't know anything about. But you guys really are those that are kind of right behind every organization or every public landowner to kind of give them that boost. And you guys were integral goal in the corner crossing case, which was going on in Carbon County, which the Missouri four guys that were busted, not really on trespassing, but they were corner crossing. So really kind of got into a sticky situation.
Yeah. Pretty interesting case. Four pretty smart guys got the good idea to try and access a big piece of public land by crossing at a corner from one parcel of public to another parcel of public. And the private landowner who owned the other two pieces of that checkerboard did not like it. So he had them charged both criminally and civilly with trespass. And after years of battling in court, we got a ruling from the 10th Circuit of the Supreme Court in favor of the Missouri Four, so essentially legalizing corner crossing on federal lands in all of the 10th Circuit states, which unlocks millions of previously landlocked land for hunters and fishermen and women and everybody else to enjoy. So it was a very big win. I can't state that enough. And we really have Ryan Simrad of Casper, Wyoming, and his defense team that stepped up to the plate and really fought the battle in the court, and they did phenomenal. Ryan's story is a pretty unique one. He's a great guy, and we appreciate all of the hard work him and his team did for us.
So what does this mean now for the public? You know, you had mentioned that you'll be able to access lands that have been landlocked over years. So can you give us maybe an example of how this is really going to benefit Wyomingites or anyone looking to access public land?
Yeah, so this ruling is specific to the 10th Circuit states, which Wyoming belongs in, but other states like Montana and some other ones do not. So it is specific to the 10th Circuit states. But essentially, it makes corner crossing legal and not a criminal act, as long as it's done legally. So that's still to be determined, but essentially, as long as you don't physically touch the private land and you move from one corner of public to another corner of public without causing any damage, you should not be able to be criminally charged with trespass.
So it is definitely worth knowing where you are, and we talk a lot about Onyx maps and really studying those maps to make sure you're in the right places.
It's always the responsible thing to do to know where you are. Onyx is a phenomenal tool for that. At this point in time, there's really not much of an excuse to not know where you are and not be aware of the boundaries. The physical boundaries out on the landscape are a lot more difficult, and phones are only so accurate. So you really do need to be careful and make sure you are doing your due diligence and know what you're doing.
Well, I'll tell you that going and following along backcountry hunters and anglers is a great way to stay informed on this mission that is really mission possible now of what maybe people thought was mission impossible at one point. But Pete, I know you can pass the word on that we're all happy and thankful of the work that has been done. And I know that you're a busy guy. You and I were talking a little while ago about how much busy things are happening with you right now. And one of the cool things that you do is the Bighorn Pack Llamas. And this summer you'll be pretty busy with those, won't you?
Yeah, the summer's already looking pretty busy, even this spring and into fall. So it's going to be a good year, but a busy year for us at Bighorn Pack Llamas. We've got several trips on the books, several rentals booked already. So things are filling up fast as always, but it's always a good thing to have that happen.
So with the Pack Llamas, basically what you'll do for folks is you can pack the camp in that they want to stay, you'll take it in, set it up, and then come back and pick it up when they're finished?
Yeah. So for our summer drop camp packages, that's exactly right. We pack up all of our gear, our wall tents, cots, stoves, tables, chairs, all of the creature comforts and nice amenities. Throw it all on the llamas and pack that in and set everything up for you. And you just have to walk in. You can hike in with us and lead a llama if you'd like to. And then you just stay, enjoy camp for as long as you'd like, up to about a week or so. And then when you're all finished, we pack in with the llamas, pack up camp, and pack it all out for you. So it's really a nice, easy way to get into the backcountry and enjoy things in a little bit more style than carrying everything on your back.
Yeah, how cool is that? Of course, you can go follow Pete. I love watching you with your llamas. Go at Bighorn Pack Llamas on social media is where you can go check that out. And I know you guys also have some ways that hunters can take advantage of the llamas as well, right?
Yeah. During the hunting season, we do offer llamas for rent. So you'll do a course either with me in person, or now we're offering an online hybrid type course to learn the ins and outs of packing with llamas. And after a while, then you'll be ready to take the llamas out on your own. So the way the rentals work is you pick them up here in Casper, and you can take them anywhere you're legally allowed to go in Wyoming and take them on the hunt with you and enjoy them and hopefully put them to work and put all the meat on their backs and then bring them back home to us. So it's a really good way for hunters to be able to access areas that they previously couldn't or had difficulty doing so. And we're happy to be able to share our llamas and promote the pack llama industry.
One of the cool part about the pack llamas, they don't take as much food and water as a horse. And they're a little more compact, but can still carry a pretty heavy load.
Yeah, they are phenomenal pack animals. They truly are born and bred to do it. They drink about a tenth of what a horse does. They eat about a tenth of what a horse does, but they carry about half. So some of our bigger llamas can carry upwards of 80, 90, 100 pounds, especially over shorter distances, but most of our standard pack llamas are carrying 70 or 80 pound packs for 10 miles or so a day. And a lot of times I'll bring in what I call a water llama, and I'll just pack in, you know, 8, 10, 12 gallons of water, and then that way I don't have to filter any potentially, depending on how long I stay in, or at least for a few days for me and the llamas. So, yeah, it's very advantageous to be in the backcountry with the llamas. They're a whole lot less work and a lot easier to deal with than most of the other stock animals I've worked with.
So, I mean, really, if you're looking for an easier way to get into a deep backcountry camping trip or hunting trip this fall, it'd be a great reason to reach out and contact Pete. And do you have a lot of openings still this year, Pete?
We do have some, but, you know, the closer into the summer season and the fall season, the fuller we will get. So as soon as the draw results come out, especially for the non-residents, we start getting a ton of calls. And then as well as, you know, a few days later or a month or so later, I should say, when the resident results come out. So rentals do book up really quickly for the hunting season. Those are a little bit more limited. But the summer is getting pretty full as well. So if you are interested, please go ahead and reach out to us. We'll get some details from you and try and get you on the books.
And obviously, you guys do events all the time. And if people want to have a picnic with a llama or just a day hike, you do that. It's kind of therapeutic, isn't it?
Yeah. Yep. We do day hikes out of Casper and then also in the Sierra Madre and the snowy ranges. And then we also do special events. So things like weddings and birthday parties, concerts. We bring the llamas just about anywhere they let me in anyway. So
I saw a photo of a llama that was in a wedding. And I mean, do you rent out like groomsmen?
Yeah, for we'll have to pay their agent for that one, but yeah.
That's awesome. Well, Pete, how can people get a hold of you and contact you if they're looking to get involved with the Pack Llamas?
Yeah, so bighornpackllamas.com is the website. You can get a hold of us there. We're also on Instagram at Bighorn Pack Llamas and Facebook at Bighorn Pack Llamas as well. So feel free to reach out to us, even if you're just interested in more information. We love to talk llamas, so hope to hear from you.
So cool. Well, Pete, you're a busy, busy guy, and thanks for doing all that you do and keep your nose to the grindstone and keeping us informed.
Well, thanks, Drew. I appreciate it. Always love coming on here and always appreciate the support you give us.
Wyoming Hooking and Hunting Outdoors with Drew Kirby. If you have a question, want to make a comment, or have an idea for a show topic, message us on the My Country mobile app. Wyoming Hooking and Hunting Outdoors.